All right, good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday, June 21st. It is 10:02 a.m. There is a quorum present. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. You can all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
As a reminder, folks, turn off your cell phones or silence them. We are going to move on to item number four, which is discussion for possible action. This is consideration and possible approval of the June 21st, 2022 agenda. County manager, are there any changes to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I can bring this up during consent agenda or now, but we would like to ask to move a consent agenda item to the regular agenda. If you want, I'll just take care of it now. We can adjust it.
Yeah.
That would be to, on number seven, Roman numeral 8, VIII, to move to the general agenda immediately after number 14. That is a policy item.
Okay. And what number was that again?
It's Roman numeral 8, the last one.
Yep. And I'm moving that to 14?
Correct. Or after number 14, actually be 15.
Okay.
So, thank you.
All right. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any comments or questions about today's agenda?
I do not, thank you.
I do not, thank you.
All right, Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No, sir.
All right, is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? As a reminder, folks on Zoom, raise your hand, or if you're calling in, you can use star 6 to unmute yourself. Or use the chat feature. Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve today's agenda with the one noted change of moving item 7, subsection 8, after 14.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 5, this discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of amended minutes from March 1, 2022 to correct the date of the meeting from March 15, 2022 to March 1, 2022. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about item number 5?
No, sir.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding item number 5? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve the amended minutes from March 1st, 2022 to correct the date of the meeting from March 15th to March 1st, 2022.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving right along to item number 6, this discussion of possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the minutes for May 3rd, 2022 meeting. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any comments or questions about the minutes for May 3rd?
No, sir.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding the minutes for May 3rd, 2022? Not seeing any public comment, Vice Chairman, if you care to entertain a motion.
Yeah, I move to approve the minutes of our May 3rd, 2022 meeting as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 7, which is today's consent agenda. Mr. Gilman, do you have any comments or questions about today's consent agenda?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman Mitchell, anything?
No, I don't have any comments about today's consent agenda.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you entertain a motion with the noted changes?
I will. So is it appropriate for me to just acknowledge that we're not including item 8? Is that the best way to do it? Okay. All right. I move to approve today's consent agenda, including items 1 through 7, but not including item 8.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 8. This is public comment. Public comment will be allowed at the beginning and end of each meeting. This comment should be limited to matters not on today's calendar agenda. Public comment will be allowed after each item on the agenda, and these comments should be limited to the agendized topic. With that said, is there any public comment today?
Good morning. This is Nancy McCormick with EDON, Senior Vice President, and do I have permission to speak?
Go ahead.
Okay, wanted to make sure you could hear me. I'm here today to just lift up a concern about the high speed of travel on I-80 between Sparks and the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center due to accidents and dangerous conditions. We'd like to request assistance from the commission to have additional highway patrol monitoring, especially early in the morning. The situation has been reported as negatively impacting employers' ability to hire and keep employees. And I do believe we have another public comment from a representative from one of those companies who would also like to share some information. So any help that the commission can do to provide assistance with getting a bit more enforcement on that stretch of road due to the high rates of speed would really be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Nancy, before we go to the next public comment, have you already reached out to the Highway Patrol regarding this matter?
So the CEO of the company, my understanding is, did have a conversation with Highway Patrol, who indicated that they weren't in a position to provide that additional type of monitoring because of staffing. And so we wanted to see if there was any other influence, I guess, that could be made to either explore that or discuss it further. I have requested from the Regional Transportation Commission and NDOT a summary of the accidents and fatalities over the past 12 months on that stretch of highway as compared to others, so that there would be some data on which to, which you could be used to have that conversation with the Highway Patrol.
Great, I appreciate that. And when you get that data, if you don't mind sending it over to the commissioners here or the county manager, and you can send that out to each of us.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate that.
Yep, we'll do that.
All right. Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment today?
I believe Bill Wilson, representative from Schuylkill Rubber, was intending to speak. Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So,
for the record.
Bill, state your name for the record, please.
This is Bill Wilson with Schuylkill Rubber Corporation. So our concern is that the trip to work and to home is becoming exceedingly dangerous for some of our employees. We've actually had 2 employees quit working with us just because of the hazard on the road, fearing their lives on the trip to work. It's also becoming a bit of a problem for us to obtain more help out here. So it's impacting our business model as well as our ability to maintain the labor force we do have.
All right. Thank you, Bill. I do have a question for you, and I don't know if my fellow commissioners have questions either, but out of curiosity, where's your facility located?
So we're located out at Denmark Drive. And the trip to work, I understand that Electric Avenue is probably the most dangerous stretch of road out here from some conversations I've had with some of the officers in the field, but it appears that just getting up to Denmark Drive can sometimes be extraordinarily hazardous. There's a curve up here that folks are coming down the hill from the area where Walmart distribution center might be letting out, and in excess of 60 miles an hour, blind curve, And there's been a couple of accidents, one including our company president in the years past on some of these blind curves. So as we get more folks into the area, it becomes a bit of a hazard for us, and it's definitely affecting our ability to maintain our labor force out here.
All right, Bill, thank you very much for that. We'll definitely take a look at it and see if there's anything that can be done.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate you taking the time to be here. All right, is there any other public comment?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't usually speak during this, but I can bring it up during staff, but our representative from Scruple Rubber may disappear. I just want to let him know if he can reach out to Laura Mather, and she's put together quite a group out of Tri-Center to try to talk about these matters. And a lot of times she will invite representatives from NHP or NDOT or other organizations, and they need to hear this directly from our companies as well as from us. If you have any, just reach out to her or myself, and I'll just relay the message over to you and her, and then you guys can talk. That might be a good start while we also continue to communicate with NDOT and some of these other officials on issues regarding Interstate 80. And then also the county is working on a transportation management association with EDON and with Laura's group and others to try to put together a coalition of folks, not only on Interstate 80, but also Northwestern Nevada, to also discuss these and kind of have a little bit of momentum behind them and some power to try to work with the agencies that would be involved in transportation planning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Did you say there was somebody else that had something? All right, is there any other public comment today? All right, thanks again for those who spoke up today. We are going to move on to item number 9, which is discussion only. No action, no public comment will be taken. These are committee and staff reports. We're going to start off with the Sheriff's Office.
Good morning, Commissioners. Just a few things. We had a couple of items that we submitted for the agenda back in on June 1st that did not make it onto the agenda. The one, they're already operating on a temporary license, so it's not a big issue. The other one, they've been waiting for a period because of the background investigation. And so we're going to go ahead and issue them a temporary, since there was a scheduling error, and then hopefully we'll have it in front of the board for approval at the next go around. Then kind of exciting, our first cannabis distribution center, they were granted their temporary. If the board remembers, they did a first reading approval sometime back because of the way that the state requirements go. They needed to have their temporary license to finalize the stuff with the state. They have that. It's my understanding they are either have or are in the process of finalizing. So our cannabis retailer should be opening the doors pretty quick anytime. And lastly, just to comment on the traffic issues that were brought up in public comment. Of course, as we all know, Interstate 80 is not within the confines of Story County. I know the deputies have been spending a lot of time out in the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center on streets like Electric and Denmark. So we're doing everything we can to keep them slowed down a little bit. Highway Patrol does handle USA Parkway, but the deputies are back and forth on that, and they take action when they see something. But we're definitely open to discussing any issues that employers have that happen within the jurisdictional confines of Story County.
All right, thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate the update. We're going to go ahead and move on to the fire department. Chief Loncar.
Good morning, Commissioners. Jeremy Longcar for the record. Several items here. Is one, since promotion of Scott Snelling to fire marshal, we have extended a job offer to an Elko County firefighter who will be starting after the first of the month as our new inspector. So that brings us 100% staffed. Secondly, with the possibility of some funding coming in the fruition of all of Laura Mather's work with the fire station, we have put together a fire station design committee, design spec committee, where we're starting to get some at least conceptuals put together and a plan moving forward. So as more funding resources come available, we are ready for them. I do welcome any of the board, if you'd like to ever stop by the office and kind of see what we have kind of put together at this moment. Any inputs, more than welcome as well. Next, the NSFA conference does start tomorrow. So we're going to have quite a few people into town. A lot of my staff will be moving around assisting with these. There's quite a few training exercises that go on. And which leads me to Friday. We're doing a live fire burn below the high school on Friday, starting Friday morning. It's supposed to last all day. So if you see flames, there's some LP props that do put up some flames, probably about 20 foot high in the air. So people will see and they do take notice to that. And again, if any of the board would like to come down and join, I am one of the instructors that day, and I would gladly walk you through the problem and see what we have going on. Next, June 27th, we will be doing internal promotional testing for captain's position. We do not have an active open position at this time. This is for an eligibility list that lasts a year. We are still in need of a couple of evaluators for some of our scenarios. So back to the board again, if any of you would like to be part of this testing process, please reach out to me. It would probably be a full day commitment on the 27th, but we could definitely use a little assistance with that. And then our seasonal positions, we were approved for 8 of those. We filled 3 of those. So if anyone knows somebody that's fresh out of high school, good worker that can be trained, we do still have seasonal positions open. So I encourage anyone to put in and we can walk them through some of the prereqs that are required and they can do it online. And our very last thing to report is moving into this year, we were approved for a brush truck, which we're evaluating different funding mechanisms to see what we can do to get more bang out of the buck. From what we're receiving from our vendors right now is, even if we put in the order today, we're 2 to 3 years out on getting a brush truck. So that's kind of hard news because we are behind the curve already since these units were early 80s models and we've really ran them into the ground. So we're going to be moving fairly quick on at least getting our name on a list and wait out that hopefully more than 2, not the 3 years, but we've got to get on that list pretty soon to get something coming. And I have nothing else. And I'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Chief Longcar?
Yeah, no questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thanks.
The only question I have is what time is that live fire burn?
We're going to start at 8 o'clock in the morning on Friday. And please come down there and at least look around and meet some of the other instructors and some of the students. We have some from our mutual aid organizations around here that are assisting us as well.
Great. Thank you again for that update.
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to Public Works, Jason Wersbicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Mike Northen, Operations Projects Coordinator, reporting for Director Wersbicki. He just had one item on here, but it has to do with roads, but I didn't see the Highway Commission on the agenda, so I'll just report it here if that's okay.
Please.
The 2022 road rehab project is almost finished. Paving and slurry is complete today, and tomorrow they will begin striping. And that's all I have for you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mike. You want to just slide right into the projects coordinator?
I have nothing to report today for the project coordination side. Thank you.
All right. Thank you again for that update. Moving right along to communications, Becky Parsons. All right, thank you. Emergency management, Laura Mather.
Good morning, Laura Mather, for the record. I have one update, and it kind of expands on the update that I gave at the last commissioner meeting. At the last meeting, I had talked about the five community project grants, or what we used to call appropriations, being formally submitted by the senators, both senators. I'm very pleased to announce that last week we were notified that our sixth project was formally submitted to the Department of Interior by Senators Cortez Masto and Rosen's office. So that makes all six of the six projects that we submitted were formally approved and submitted by the senators. This particular project is part of the water system replacement and upgrades. The grant amount is $2,400,000. So just the grant amounts that have been approved by the senators and submitted totals $10,334,000. Sounds really good if you say it slow. $10 million. It still has to go through the Senate and the House for their approval. So there's a process that'll go through. We're hoping that we will know the final for sure by the end of this year, just to kind of reiterate. And then the funds will go through the various committees. So we have one in HUD, four in USDA, and then the final one in the Department of Interior. And we hope that if all goes well, we will be able to start six projects at about early spring. I do have a little bit of COVID information, but I will give that during my agenda item.
Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Laura?
No, just a thank you. Thank you. Thank you. What great news.
Indeed. Vice Chairman Mitchell.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again for that update. All right. How about community relations? Honey Menifee.
Good morning. Honey Menifee for the record. In January, I submitted a grant to the State Historic Preservation Office. It was a grant for the Commission for Cultural Centers and Historic Preservation. And the scope of work in this application involves the electrical wiring for this courthouse, for the rehabilitation of the electrical wiring. An initial bid estimate was provided by United Electrical Services, and this bid was done in November. And their estimate for the scope of work that needs to be done was $80,418. No, $80,418.00. Last Tuesday, I attended the CCCHP grant hearing at their board meeting, and I presented the proposed project before the commissioners. In my application, I had asked for the entire amount of $80,418, and I did not say that we were going to provide a match for that. We were awarded the full amount that I requested, and that is great because normally the commission only funds up to $82.57 per hour for labor, and the United Electrical bid stated that their hourly rate was going to be $95, but they went ahead and approved the whole request. And more funds were available than were applied for, and several of the applicants had submitted incomplete applications, and so many of them were not granted the amounts that they had requested as well. And so there is a lot of potential award monies that had been left over, and I asked the commission if I could apply for more funding for two reasons. On the United Electrical Services bid, they had items excluded from the cost estimate, and they were items such as permits and fees, drywall and carpet, and other surface repair and concrete work, and like payment and performance bonds. They mostly in their bid had quoted just the price for the electrical circuitry and the panel boxes and just the electrical work. And then also prices have gone up exponentially since the bid in November. So the commission is going to hold another meeting before or at the beginning of September, and they will allow me to present a new bid from United Electrical Services. And Jeff reached out to them, Jeff Holman, and they're going to provide the bid for us in the upcoming weeks. And it's going to include all of the work items that were excluded in the initial bid, and they're going to also reflect the price increase for the actual goods that will be needed to complete the electrical work in the courthouse. So that is my update.
Great. Mr. Gilman, do you have any questions for Honey?
Yeah, more excitement. Thanks, Honey.
Mr. Sherman?
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks again for your efforts on that.
Thank you.
All right, moving right along to the BCTC. I don't see Linda on there. No. Okay, we will move on to the Comptroller's Office.
Nothing at this time.
All right. How about the Assessor's Office?
I have nothing to report at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Planning Department, Kathy Canfield.
Good morning, everybody. So I just wanted to remind you of the public workshop we're having tonight at Piper's, the Virginia City 6 Mile Area Master Drainage Plan. We'll be talking about that. The doors will open at 5 o'clock. There'll be a short presentation at 5:30. It's a very interactive presentation and workshop. So we're hoping as many people as are interested in the topic will be there tonight. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Kathy. Let's move on to the recorder's office. All right. How about the IT department?
Good morning, commissioners. James Dean, Story County IT director. Just wanted to report that we've completed a complete upgrade and revision of our backup software and strategy on all of our servers in the county. And it's fully documented and tested. And I wanted to recognize staff member Tim Shropshire for completing that major project. And that's all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Moving on to HR, Jeannie Green.
I have nothing to report. Thank you.
All right. Community Development, Pete Bruneau.
Morning, commissioners. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've had 8 new warehouses uploaded for review. A couple of them have been permitted and the rest are in review for an additional 3,525,000 square feet of warehouse out in the industrial park. On a somber note, Montane Builders informed me last week that their head superintendent passed away. He was Robin Brennan. He was a great guy. That's all I got for today.
All right. Thank you very much for that update, Pete. Moving on to community chess. I don't see Eric on there. Do I? No. How about the senior center?
Good morning. I have nothing to report today. Thank you.
Thank you. Justice Court. Judge Harrington with us this morning? Yeah. Right. How about from the DA's office?
Nothing to report today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
All right. County manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, Austin Husband for the record. Just a couple items. Just to let you know, if you don't know already, the Highlands Community Center, as a reminder, the bids for that came in quite high and were somewhat non-responsive on a few of them. So Mike Northern putting this together and us have talked, and that will go out to bid again with some amendments to the project to try to reduce the cost. So that project is still on board, still happening, but we are being fiscally responsible with it as well. I want to thank all the folks for attending the VC Depot grand opening a couple of weeks ago. And we had a lot of Lockwood residents there, if you noticed. In fact, I had people ask, how come there's so many people we don't know? Are they, you know, from out of town? Like, they are from out of town, but they're not from out of county. And the bus was a great hit. The school district, we really thank them for the bringing the Mucker bus and bringing those folks up. So we look forward to next year for another community barbecue. I'll let you know that we are continuing our economic development officer interviews and getting down to a short list of candidates. That's looking pretty confident. So hopefully in the next meeting, we'll have some type of announcement for you.
Okay.
I'll let you know that July 1st, as discussed before, we will begin the process of putting together a request for a proposal for waste management, trash services countywide. It will take a year to put this together. We're gonna work with some consultants and make sure it's all inclusive. And so that process will begin. That contract ends in 2024. The actual RFP will probably go out somewhere around the beginning of 2023. And then lastly, just as a reminder, the lands bill for all the lands in Virginia City, Gold Hill, that portion, are still with Tycor doing title review. So that is, they're working with Keith Loomis on that as far as communication, but most of the title review, of course, is with the title company. And I am communicating with Todd Hess from the school district on a pretty, about every 3 week basis on the status of that, so we can look at providing them land they need for the schools, and as well as work with Amity's office, Cortez Masto's office, and Rosen's office on some extra lands down there potentially that may give them the expansion they need beyond this. It's about 35 acres, I believe. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Austin?
No questions. Thank you.
Vice Chairman?
No, thank you.
Thanks again for that update. All right. Last but not least, the County Clerk, Dorian Evan, do you have anything? All right. Thank you for staff and their updates. We're going to jump back onto the regularly scheduled agenda here once it opens up on my tablet. All right. We are at item number 10. This is board comment. No action, no public comment will be taken. Commissioner Gilman, you have anything today?
Nothing today. Thank you, sir.
All right. Off to my left, Vice Chairman Mitchell.
Just one or two things. The first one is I was reminded when I looked at our list of business license first readings, there was a name on here that caught my attention. That was Bitcoin Depot, which it's something that I'm curious about and interested in. So I did a little bit of research, and believe it or not, Story County has hit the big time. We are the location of a Bitcoin ATM. I had no idea, but if you want to buy Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency, you can stop by the Golden Gate gas station on USA Parkway, and tucked onto one side of their cashier's station is a Bitcoin ATM. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm glad they're, for such a small presence in the county, it's nice to see them doing the right thing, getting a business license. The other thing is, and I don't know, Chair, were you going to mention the start graduation at all? If so, I'll pass on that. Or
yeah,
okay. Had both Chairman Carmona and I had the opportunity to attend a celebration of the graduation, the first class of a program that's called START. It's one of the few things at Tesla that's not an acronym for anything. And it basically is an intensive training for technicians to keep the robotics and equipment in the factory working. And this was the very first class. It's 12 weeks long, and they crank through 5 different subject areas, including robotics and mechanics and safety and other things. And they're really there, all of their 10 graduates, a lot of them young people, really looking to advance their careers. It's pretty exciting to see. I talked to some of the people involved in it, and Tesla are really trying to have a whole variety of training programs so that anyone who's looking to up their skills, we can just send them their way and they will identify which program is a better fit for them. This particular program, the ideal candidate has some familiarity with some of the technical side of things, but also has some people skills because they're going to be working with different teams within the factory, whereas they have other training programs that are a better fit for those who just want to get onto the factory floor as a materials handler, more of an entry level, but get up to speed quickly. And so that was pretty exciting, and the start of some good things. I think the workforce development, Nancy commented earlier, does a lot of work in that regard, but having some of this right in-house makes a lot of sense. And I'm really interested in how we can make sure that we properly publicize it as it ramps up and make sure that people know that it's an option to get into really solid, good paying jobs. I don't remember if I mentioned or not, but every single one of the graduates were given an offer. They were placed right upon graduation. So that's it.
You're not going to talk about the Kobe burgers?
What's that?
Oh. Kobe burgers? It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That was a great event. Good to see a good turnout there. The only thing I'd like to talk about was, again, the unveiling of the depot. It was a fantastic turnout. A lot of Story County staff, you know, volunteered their time to be there and help facilitate folks around the building. I know there's some tours, and then Miles Construction, of course, who pretty much funded the entire event. I want to thank them again. But it was just great to see, you know, a decent size of the community out there enjoying themselves, getting to talk with each other. I definitely am one that will look forward to at least one yearly event like that, where the community can get out and just enjoy themselves. So that was a great event. And I believe that the depot is officially open for some events going forward. I think we have some weddings that are scheduled there soon. So glad to see that that's moving forward. That is the end of my board comments. And we're going to move on to item number 11. This discussion for possible action, consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-651, requesting the governor of the state of Nevada to direct the Nevada Department of Transportation to implement safety improvements to the westbound Interstate 80 on-ramp at Lockwood, Nevada. Excuse me. County Manager Roslin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Give me a moment here. Austin Osborne for the record, County Manager. What you have in front of you is a resolution that would be requested go straight to the governor of the state of Nevada for the purpose of expediting lane extensions at the westbound I-80 on-ramp from Lockwood. We've been working with NDOT at least for 10 years, I know before that, and working with them on a personal basis, in-person meetings, groups, collaborations, meetings down at their folks' headquarters and up here on the phone, and including in writing, including from this board giving direction to NDOT to put this interchange on the number one priority of the state transportation improvement plan, the STIP. Since that point, we have communicated with NDOT on numerous bases. And as you're aware, in 2020, we had asked Lockwood residents if they would send letters to NDOT. And we had approximately 65 to 75 letters, at least, that were received from my offices and forwarded over to NDOT, requesting simply to do something about the westbound on-ramp of this interchange. So at this point, I'm asking that this board consider a resolution going directly to the governor himself, and that we would copy NDOT, and that this would look at simply, please put this on a priority of the state and transportation improvement plan, and please budget for this extension. If we understand that it'll take a year or two for that to happen, even under the most expedient basis, this resolution also includes interim improvements that this board and staff have also asked NDOT to implement, including low cost items like widening the shoulder. So if a person approaches the fast lane, they are not able to, they at least have somewhere to go as an emergency. Maybe putting left lane trucks only around this area of this interchange to allow a little bit more room to merge, putting no passing signs, putting warning signs, lighting the signs some way or another, and other mechanisms that would be determined by a qualified traffic engineer from NDOT. That we believe that these are low cost, sensible solutions while that interchange extension is being considered. So at this point, that letter does talk about the whereases, what the purpose of this is. This is a senior community with limited income, driving vehicles in many cases that are not agile enough to be able to merge into traffic at the speeds necessary, let alone the people with seniors having physical agility issues and doing the same. I could tell you for myself that don't have these issues, it's a challenge getting onto that interstate, as we all know. Also notes in this resolution that this is principal access to the Lockwood community, and also that it is principal emergency access for emergency vehicles, sheriffs, and others. And then it's all also mentioned at the end that we have no jurisdiction as a county to make the improvements ourselves. It is incumbent upon NDOT to be able to do that. I'm open to any questions you have. In addition to this, all of the letters that were submitted to NDOT and us by the Lockwood residents is included as an enclosure that would also go to the governor's office.
Thank you, Austin. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
Well, I believe that the I-80 subject matter should be a high priority for our county. It appears that it's been ignored, or if not ignored, slow played for so many years. And I think it's time to make some noise and see if we can't make something happen. So I'm delighted that we're looking at this. I thank you for the report, Austin, and I certainly support everything we can do to make Highway 80 a safer commute for everybody.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Vice Chairman Mitchell, do you have anything?
Yeah, I would just mention that, you know, this has been at the top of our list of priorities, this particular issue, for several years at least. When we communicate to MDOT the things that are on our mind are important to our communities. And I think at very least, applying whatever sort of influence or pressure we can to get some temporary resolution, maybe not a permanent fix in the short term, but something to deal with the safety issues, I think is absolutely apropos. So I'm supportive.
All right. I share my fellow commissioners' feelings regarding this. So thank you for bringing this up. Is there any public comment regarding item number 11 and the off-ramp at Interstate 80? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve resolution number 22-651, requesting the governor of the state of Nevada to direct the Nevada Department of Transportation to implement safety improvements to the westbound Interstate 80 on-ramp at Lockwood, Nevada.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Austin. Much appreciated. That is bringing us on to my favorite agenda item of the day, item number 12. Laura Mather, come on down.
Laura Mather, for the record. On May 18th, 2022, the state of Nevada formally terminated their declaration of emergency for the COVID-19 pandemic. Carson City Health and Human Services has temporarily suspended their community-based vaccination events for the pandemic. They are seeing a very low demand for vaccinations simply because it is offered so many other places. So vaccinations, testings, those kind of things are offered at pharmacies, doctor's offices, all of those places. So that will be temporarily suspended. On behalf of Story County, Carson City Health and Human Services is monitoring it closely, as with everything health related. If at any time they feel that the community-based testing or vaccinations need to be started again, they will start that. If Story County chooses to terminate our COVID-19 declaration of emergency, that will not affect that at all. They will continue to monitor the situation, ramp up if need be. So with that, it's staff recommendation that Story County formally terminate our COVID-19 declaration of emergency.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Laura about this?
I have none, thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Nope.
All right, and I don't have any questions either. Thank you. Is there any public comment regarding item number 12 and the declaration of emergency? Not seeing any public comments. Vice Chairman Mitchell, do you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve resolution number 22-652 to dissolve Story County's declaration of emergency due to COVID-19 resolution number 20-568 adopted on March 17th, 2020.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 13, this discussion for possible action, consideration and possible approval of the acceptance of the renewal from Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool or to enroll with alternate insurance agencies, Travelers or Liberty Mutual, for liability and casualty insurance and the approval of payment not to exceed $485,000 for fiscal year 2022-2023.
Good morning.
Morning.
For the record, Jared Rossi with LP Insurance Services, here to present your renewal options. The first item I'm going to review is a summary of the premiums looking like this within your agenda packet. Pool offered three different options, $5,000, $10,000, $25,000 deductible. Moving to the next item, I've provided a summary of coverages. It's a year-by-year comparison. I'm going to roll through your coverages real quick, and I'll highlight any changes between the 2 years. But your current property, you have a blanket property limit of $300 million. Sublimits applying to that are accounts receivable at $5 million, arson reward 10% up to $25,000, earthquake $150 million aggregate amongst all members. Flood, $150 million aggregate as well, with a $25 million aggregate for flood zone A. That's the high hazard area. Equipment breakdown, $100 million per loss. This also includes a loss of income and extra expense. Sublimits of hazardous substance coverage at $250,000 per loss. Spoilage coverage at $250,000 per loss. Data restoration at $100,000 per loss. Expediting expenses, $25,000 per loss. Unintentional errors and omissions, $5 million per loss. Money and securities, $500,000 per loss, and you have the agreed value of vehicles per the schedule submitted. For the liability limits, for each event and your aggregate, $10 million. The limits of liability are subject to sublimits, and the liability limits included are auto liability, general liability, personal injury liability, employment practices liability, law enforcement liability, and wrongful acts liability. The next section is really the only change in coverage we have this year. The cyber liability moved from $3 million per event last year to $3 million with an annual aggregate of $15 million across pool. Privacy response and expense coverage is included in that as well. Environmental liability, which is pollution, is also provided. Coverage A, third-party claims for bodily injury, property damage, or remediation expense, $2 million each event with a $10 million aggregate. Coverage B, which is first party remediation expense, $2 million per incident with a $10 million aggregate. Coverage C, emergency response expense, $2 million each occurrence, $10 million aggregate. And your business interruption coverage D, $2 million per each interruption, 365-day limit. Just again, wanted to highlight the one change in coverage, which was the cyber liability in that comparison. The next item we provided is a deeper look at the deductibles as well as the option that was provided in the open market. So the open market was Travelers on the liability and Liberty Mutual on the property. They came in at a do not exceed number of $460,000. However, due to some underwriting items, that option is not available right now, but it may be available again next year. That leads us back to the total cost of program, which is the next item. What we've done is we've taken 10 years of loss history. We've gone through each claim and capped it at the given deductible level. And then we've paired that information with the renewal premiums. And that's what gives you this total cost of program for the three different scenarios, as well as the three different deductibles. So the $5,000, $10,000, $25,000 paired with your best year of losses, an average year of losses, and your worst year of losses. That claim information is supported on the next page, showing the total incurred claims, the capped amounts for each year, and then the number of claims per year as well. The last item I want to share with you, based on a presentation that Pool gave about a month and a half ago, they detailed their programs, and I wanted to see if we could quantify that with where we are. So I included the cost that they gave us as far as the amount of or number of years that they gave that to us, and I tried to annualize it as well. From 2016 to present, total programs have paid out about $209,966 with an annualized weighted value of about $76,803. So as far as a premium, you don't see that within your premium, but that's not an item you necessarily pay for. It's all included within the program. That's all the information I have to share so far, but I can go through the deductible options real quick. $5,000 deductible came in at $481,351. $10,000 deductible, $458,209, and your $25,000 deductible option, $409,348. Any questions that I can answer for you on this?
Thank you, Jared. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Jared?
There are no questions. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Jared, would you mind just relating the last information that you reviewed to the total cost of the program and just just kind of what the difference is or how they relate to each other, both on that same
page. Yeah, absolutely. As far as the programs offered by Pool and that cost.
Correct.
Yeah, to try and offset where that total cost of program is, basically if you took those numbers and reduced it by 76,803, that's pretty much where the market value of that would be. It doesn't reflect in the pricing that Pool gives. So I wanted to make sure that we highlighted that they are giving a fair amount of value back. So, you know, if we were to move to another carrier, we would more than likely have to pay for those items as well. So I want to make sure that that doesn't go unaddressed.
Thank you.
All right. I don't have any questions for you, Jared. We'll see if there's any public comment regarding item number 13. Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to understand the motion?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, is I'm sorry if I missed it, but is there a staff recommendation on which direction here? I would love to hear if there is.
Jennifer McCain, for the record, staff is recommending that we go with the $5,000 deductible. At this point, where we are financially, we feel that it's a better option to be able to budget for the certain, which is the higher premium, than to have a larger unknown floating around out there that we can't even put a dollar amount on.
Great, thank you. With that in mind, if there are any further thoughts from either you gentlemen, otherwise I'll make a motion, I think, to go with staff's recommendation.
I'm good with a $5,000 deductible. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any problems with the $5,000 deductible?
No, I'm in agreement.
Okay.
And your motion would include the insurance company's name, and it's Pool.
In this case, it's Pool, correct. Okay. So I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve renewing an insurance coverage with Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool, or Pool, with a deductible amount of $5,000, and so move to approve payment for fiscal year 2022-2023 coverage.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you for being here, Jared.
Thank you all.
I appreciate it. All right, moving on to item number 14. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of modification and extension of collective bargaining agreement between Story County, the employer, and Story County Employees Association, also known as AFSCME, Local 4041, Comstock Chapter. Austin?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Austin Osborne, County Manager, for the record. I'm going to bring a couple of our folks up with us. We did this as a team, but I'll give a little bit of an introduction here. So the 2019 to 2022 collective bargaining agreement between Story County and the AFSCME Employees Association of Story County expires on July 1 of this year. Part of our team included Jennifer McCain, our comptroller, Jeannie Green, our interim HR director, and working together on this contract, we were able to come up with a tentative agreement between the county and the union, which is in front of you today. Also a member of our team was Sutton Hague Law Firm that would periodically do reviews and give guidance on various elements of the contract as needed. I'll let you know that we did have 8 meetings with the union, and those meetings were, I believe, about 2.5-3 hours each, and sometimes longer, and lots of back and forth and caucusing and various activities. At this point, as a very 100,000-foot overview, what is in front of you is a tentatively agreed contract with the highest level items is wages, health insurance premiums, the duration of the contract being 3 years, and then some other things like commercial driver's license, water, sewer, and other types of incentive pay so we can take existing employees and incentivize them to provide other purposes as needed without hiring additional people. Jeannie and Jennifer will talk in detail about these things, but all of the numbers that were associated with this were really based on COLAs or cost of living adjustments for wages. There were no major changes to the chart or to grades and salary positions or anything like that. Health insurance benefits is kind of phasing away from the, you're hired before 2014, you get 100% dependent. You're hired after 14, you get something different. And now we're going to start bringing everybody into the same package. And there will have to be some give and take on both sides. Everything that they did on this was based on comparisons with other jurisdictions, fiscal responsibility limitations, being competitive with the region on both sides, trying to make sure that we are a competitive employer, and also being fiscally responsible with taxpayer dollars. The results in this are, we believe, is a fair contract between both of the parties. It's a win-win, but not anybody got everything they wanted. There was give and take on both sides. The comparisons were Carson City, Lyon, Douglas County, Humboldt County, Elko County, and Churchill County. Churchill does not have a union, but they were a lot of their comps for what their employees are provided are included in this. And at this point, I'm going to pass it over. Jeannie took most of the lead on the article writing and the kind of the CBA stuff. She'll have some discussion on that. And Jennifer on the fiscal and the cost. In reality, all three were involved in everything at every point. So I'll go ahead and pass the torch and go for it, Jeannie.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Jeannie Green, labor relations for the county. As Austin said, we reached agreement with the union on a three-year contract, which was important to us because of legislative sessions and just the time involved to reach agreement on contracts. There are two minor edits to the contract that was provided to you. On page two, I missed a date in there, and it still reflects 2019. It should be 2022. And on page 11, under TAC differential, it should state union eligible employee, not just union employee. But those are just very minor edits. The most significant changes to the contract are probationary employees can now join the union to receive union benefits only. So they can get the educational benefits, the discounts that are offered to union employees, but they will not receive any additional employment rights. Austin mentioned the COLA increases. Those were based upon comparisons with surrounding counties. And what we reached agreement on is 3% July 1st of 2022, 2% July 1st of 23, and 2% July of 24. And also in that particular article, we did indicate that if there is a PERS increase, it will be shared equally between the employee and the employer. So for example, if there's a PERS increase next year of 2%, the employee will have to contribute 1% of their pay increase to PERS, and the county will pick up the other 1%. We increased standby pay. And again, this is consistent with surrounding counties. Currently, we pay $3 an hour. It will go to $4.25. And on holidays, it will go from $4 an hour to $6 an hour. Health insurance for dependents is one of the biggest issues that was changed in the contract. It's going to be implemented incrementally. This July, employees hired prior to July 1st of 2014 will pay 15% for dependent coverage, and the county will pick up 85%. Prior to this change in the contract, the employee did not contribute anything to their dependent coverage. Employees hired after July 14th will pay 40% for dependent coverage, and the county will pick up 60%. And this is a change for those employees. Right now, they're paying 100% for dependent coverage, so I'll go down to 40%. And then July of 2023, all employees will be treated the same. They will all pay 30% for dependent coverage, and the county will pick up 70%. to help offset the cost to the employees, we did put in a provision that employees can buy out 40 hours of their sick leave, and that monetary amount will go towards either their HSA or towards their premiums. They can't just get cash for it. It would go to one or the other. A couple of other changes is we increased the footwear. These are for the public works employees. Currently, they're getting $150 every two years. We've increased that to $187.50 every year. And then we also have a provision for the mechanics. Most of them bring in their own tools on the job. They buy their own tools. We now have a $600 reimbursement plan for them every year. And there was one additional article that we added at the request of the union, and it's how monies are paid if an employee dies while they're still in office or a county employee. It's already covered in NRS, but they wanted it added to the articles. Do you have, Jennifer's going to talk about the cost of this, but do you have any questions regarding the changes I've mentioned?
Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Jeannie at this time?
No questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman Mitchell?
I do not. Thank you.
Nor do I.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning again, Jennifer McCain for the record. As Jeannie and Austin mentioned, we had some financial issues that changed within the contract. Some of them were major, some I'm not gonna touch on that were very minor. For example, the new tool article that would cost the county approximately $1,800 in a year. So that's not reflected in these changes. The 3% for the first year will be a cost, an increase of approximately $84,000. The first year, the 2% increase will be a cost of approximately $58,000. And the third year at 2% will be approximately another $59,000. It's important to note that these wage increases do not reflect any reclasses or merit increases that employees may receive throughout these 3 years. The standby pay changes of $3 to $4.25 run approximately $19,000 a year, and the holiday standby pay, which is approximately 525 hours, going from $4 to $6, will be approximately $1,100 a year. And of course, there are additional payroll benefits that go along with these wage increases, and they will run approximately $32,000 for the first year and $24,000 for the subsequent 2 years. Our health insurance cost is going to be an increase the first year of $18,000 and progressively change through the years. This is a total 3 year cost of this contract of approximately $360,000. Again, this does not include any merit or reclass wages or any health insurance increases that come about each year as we bid for new insurance. Do you have any questions for me?
Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Jennifer at this point?
No questions. Thank you, Jennifer.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Nor do I.
Okay.
Thank you for your work on this. Anything else? Nope. Is there any public comment regarding item number 14? Watch out.
Janice Edden, Story County Assessor for the record. I have some questions in regards, because they didn't mention elected officials and how that's going to affect us. And there was nothing that was said about how much 30% a year is going to cost, because as being an elected official and one of the longer employees here at Story County, we don't get sick leave, so there's no way to compensate for that 30% increase. So I'm just kind of asking where we're going with that and what the deal is, because that just looks like more money out of pocket for us. I love that they're trying to help out the new employees coming in, because that's always been kind of one of those things that we get 100% paid and they get nothing. I love that. But I would like to know what's going to happen to those of us that are elected officials as far as the insurance goes.
Mr. Chairman, Austin Osborne for the record. I think what we should do is what's being brought up here is an item that deals with appointed and elected officials. We do have an agenda item after this that deals with health benefits insurance for appointed officials that are not part of the collective bargaining agreement. So that would be my suggestion in this case to just address this in the next agenda item.
Sounds good.
And then lastly, I just want to thank the union and the folks in the and our employees for working with us on this. As we know, NRS 288 requires that these meetings are done in closed session, and that there is, you know, a process by which we do these bargaining agreements. And we're really happy with the way it went, but at the same time, there was give and take on both sides, and we just want to thank both sides for working with each other in this process.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment regarding this item? Whose hand is that? Jesse Fain, yes?
Yeah, I had a question for those of us who are grandfathered in. Will we have the opportunity to change the medical plan that we chose, now knowing that there'll be a cost associated with attendance?
Jeannie Green with Labor Relations. Yes, we contacted LP Insurance and they indicated, because this is a significant change, employees may make changes to their health plan or their HSA plan.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie.
We know the approximate cost to the employees.
Jana said, and for the record again, do we know an approximate like cost of what it's going to cost for dependent coverage?
Just for the base plan for employees that were hired prior to July 1, 2014. Of course, the employee, nothing changes. The county will pay 100% of each employee. Employee spouse coverage, the employee's cost for the 15% is $139.78 a month. For the children and employee, it will be $93.18. And for employee and family, it will be $244.61. For employees that were hired after July 1, 2014, that were paying 100% of their dependent costs, their 40% will now be employee spouse, $372.74, employee children, $248.49, and for an employee family, it will be $652.30. To give you a quick example, an employee that was hired after July 1, 2014, their insurance cost them approximately $1,600 a month. That is now dropping to $652.
All right.
Okay.
Is that a new question from Jesse? Okay. All right. Thank you for that, Jennifer. Any more public comment regarding this item? All right. With that said, Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yes, I would. Is it all right if I just give a short comment before I do that?
Please.
Is that all right? I just wanted to take a moment to thank the teams on both sides that have worked through this. I know it's been a lot of work, and while we have not been involved in the day to day on the negotiation, certainly we've been consulted as the process asks for as we go, and I really appreciate the balance that has been found between being responsible in an increasing cost environment with taxpayer dollars, but also recognizing the burden that some of these increasing costs are putting on some of our employees. And so I'm appreciative of the balance that I believe has been found in this agreement, and I'm supportive of it. And with that, I'll make a motion. In accordance with the recommendation by staff and the tentative agreement between Story County as employer and the Story County Employees Association, AFSCME Local 4041, Comstock Chapter, the union, I, Commissioner Mitchell, hereby move to approve the 2022-2025 collective bargaining agreement between parties to including the two noted edits, one on page 2, updating the year 2019 to 2022, and the one on page 11, updating union employee to union eligible employee.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, everybody. We are now going to revisit consent agenda item number 8. This is for discussion and possible action, consideration and possible approval of personnel policies 701 health insurance coverage, 702 life insurance coverage, 704 retiree health benefits.
Thank you. I'm Jeannie Green. These policies coincide with the changes that were just approved for the union eligible employees. What it does is it applies to the non-represented employees. Jennifer and I sent out emails last week explaining all of this very clearly, in my opinion, to the employees so that they understand the changes that are taking place. This does not apply to elected officials at this time. Jennifer and I want more time to assess their situation because the elected officials have not received a pay increase in quite some time. And as Jenna says, they don't have sick leave to help offset the costs. So we want to look at them more clearly. So what is before you today is just for the non-represented employees. And it does the same thing. The pre-2014 individuals will be contributing 15% for dependent coverage. The post-2014 will contribute 40% in the first year, and then the second year, everyone will be treated the same at 30% coverage. They'll pick up 30%, the county will pick up 70%.
All right. Thank you, Jeannie. Gelman, do you have any questions for Jeannie or Austin? Do you have something to add, Austin, before we went to...
Have no questions.
I'll just add a very simple. Austin Osborne, for the record, Jeannie did a perfect job explaining everything. Just a little history. We've always, as far back as I remember, tried to mirror the AFSCME group on these sorts of things of management, as you call it, or the appointed folks get the same type of similar treatment as the AFSCME group. But I also want to remind us that the appointed group is not just management. There's a lot of below management and rank and file employees in that group as well that are doing the same jobs as the people that are in the AFSCME group doing various tasks in the county. This would also apply to them to make everybody in a similarly situated situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin. So no questions from Commissioner Gilman. Vice Chairman Mitchell, do you have any questions?
I guess my only question would be, you know, if this goes into effect July 1st, are there any complications that come up from continuing to review the situation or relationship to elected officials with making the changeover for the rest of the county structure and having that still outstanding at that time?
Jennifer McCain, for the record. At this point, through a payroll point of view, we do have several different unions within our organization with our responsibility. The fire is on one, so we process that one way. The sheriff's union was not involved in this, and they are a separate union. That decision has to be made separately, so they would be treated as currently, and the elected officials would also go into that boat where they would just continue their insurance as it is until that decision is made.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any questions for you, Jennifer. Is there any public comment regarding this item? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve the presented personnel policies, 701 health insurance coverage, 702 life insurance coverage, and 704 retiree health benefits.
There's a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you again, everybody. Moving on to item number 15, discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-654, setting the tax rate levy at 3.4607. percent for 2022 to 2023 fiscal year. Comptroller McCain.
Good morning, right? Yes, Jennifer McCain for the record. This is actually a housekeeping issue. Back in February, the commission voted to keep the tax rate the same, and this is your official resolution to do that for the fiscal year 22-23. I don't really have much else to add.
Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything at this time?
Questions, thank you.
Sherman Mitchell, anything?
I'm good, thanks.
All right, as am I. Is there any public comment regarding item number 15 and the tax rate? Not seeing any public comments. Vice Chairman, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah. Hi, Commissioner Mitchell. Move to approve resolution number 22-654, setting the tax rate levy at 3.4607 for fiscal year 2022-2023.
There's a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. We're going to take a quick 10-minute recess, and we will reconvene at 11:30.